It is the third day of June 2011, and I am your host, James Corbett. You're tuned into CorbettReport.com, and today we are joined by our regular monthly guest, the inimitable, unsuppressible Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster and InternationalForecaster.com, or is that IntForecaster.com? Bob Chapman, great to have you back on.
Well, thank you, and again, it's very nice to be here. We've had an extremely interesting month since we last got together. And there's all kinds of things going on, particularly in the United States regarding money as well as in Europe. And I see today that not only yesterday did they bring up the Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, but this morning on CNBC they had Alan Greenspan. And they're both talking about what a disaster it would be if this extension of short-term debt wasn't passed by the House and the Senate. So they're evidently extremely concerned that maybe this won't happen for them, because they're two big hitters when it comes to finance, monetary policy, fiscal policy. And so things probably aren't as good as they'd like it to be. And I also noticed that Alan Greenspan was talking about going to much higher tax rates and as one of the ways of solving the problem. And I didn't get the details, unfortunately. But he's a straw man, and he's up there telling you what they'd like to do, and in his way of putting it, I think we should do this. And I think that that's the way they're headed on this thing. I found it very interesting and surprising that the U.S. government is being funded now by money that is supposed to go into the federal pension plan. And the question is, on August the 2nd, if something is passed, how do they pay it back? I mean, it must be a substantial amount of money. And at the same time, if it's not passed, will they continue to do that? And where else would they go for money? And without touching what they've got there, quote, in all fairness, would they then say that they'd like to bring up a piece of legislation that has been sitting in the House for a couple of years, with no number, incidentally? And would they say to the American public, we don't have this budget passed, so extension, I should say. So I think it's not fair to fund the government out of just federal employees' pensions. So we've got this wonderful idea, and that is, we will take over your 401ks and your IRAs, and we'll give you government-guaranteed annuities for them. And in that way, we can help fund the government. And they won't tell you that there's $6 trillion in there. In the Fed program, the pension program, they also have $6 trillion. So they can operate the government for a long time if they commandeer those funds. So anything is possible. Will it be a deal? Probably. Will it be a good deal? No. I don't think there'll be any substantial cut. What they're talking about is cutting increases that would have happened had not they been changed. So they're really not going to cut the deficit. They're going to cut the increase in the deficit, sort of like, you know, a three-card Monty game where, you know, where's the P under which one of the cups? And so there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. And But there must be some strong challenge. And the reason why is that Ryan's Let's Destroy the Medicare bill was shot down. And Alan Greenspan said he liked it. And he has a private pension, so he doesn't have to go without medical care like the average person, and particularly a retirement person like myself. So anyway, that's still really up in the air. Otherwise, they wouldn't have these two gentlemen pushing so strongly for this extension. And now they're talking about tax increases, and that was bound to come. And that also brings up another thing. Is the government over the next year going to go after these 401ks and IRAs? Excuse me. The answer is maybe. And if that wasn't passed, the budget extension, then they definitely will go after it. And that means if there's going to be higher taxes yet next year, that possibility, if people were going to bow out of those two entities, maybe it'd be a good idea they do it as soon as possible.
Hmm. Well, indeed. I mean, you raised some very interesting points there. And you're certainly right that they have been running around like chickens with their heads cut off, screaming and crying bloody murder about this debt limit expansion. And it certainly does seem like the type of situation where they win if they do and they win if they don't. Because once again, it seems like they engineer the problem and then the solution works out in their favor so that they can implement the emergency measures they always wanted to implement in the first place.
Well, the hue and cry, like, you know, remember the Maine, the hue and cry today is, let's save everything that's too big to fail and the heck with the rest of you. And that's really what it's all about, corporatist fascism. It's as plain as the nose in your face. And I think it's been that way for a long time, but most people just didn't notice, me included. I never looked at Keynesianism as an instrument of corporatist fascism until just a couple of years ago. And I said to myself, gee, that's what they do. And if you look back in history, particularly at the 1930s, you'll see that after the formation of the BIS and the funding that came for Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler from Western banks and other interests. When you put it all together, as far as I'm concerned, what we experienced in the 30s and 40s, an era in which I lived, particularly the 40s, of course, what happened was that I think that was a trial run for what we're experiencing today. I mean, look at this Homeland Security, TSA. We changed a lot of people in Congress, and the Patriot Bill is voted upon again for another four-year extension, and it passes with flying colors. So the suppression of the freedom and the constitutional rights of the American people are just being thrown into a garbage dump.
Unfortunately so, and that that throwing away of our basic, or the American basic constitutional rights, it seems to be accelerating and increasing as we get closer to this economic abyss. And that raises a lot of interesting questions. I mean, for example, who was the president during the Depression?
At the beginning, of course, it was Hoover.
Hoover, and then it transitioned into?
FDR.
And yet you have people who will say with a straight face that FDR was a great president. What's your take on that?
It's incredible. I used to think he was a socialist. Now I think he was a fascist. And, you know, I should have done more thinking on it. Because he ran an investment trust. So he was in with the Wall Street gang, so to speak. And his family had been connected for many, many years with that group in New York and then earlier in Holland with the same group of people. And so there was a parallel there between what was going on in the 30s in the United States as well as in Europe. The book that comes to mind is War is a Racket by Smedley Butler. And they try to get Smedley Butler to run for the presidency, and he refused because he saw through what they were doing. He called them a bunch of fascists. And so I think this is a replay. But unfortunately, most people don't read history. And I guess you have to have a love of it to continue to read into it. And so lots and lots of people don't understand the parallels. And I'm talking about educated, intelligent people. And so that's why we're on the air, to tell them that this possibility exists.
It is remarkable when you stop and think about it to think that there was this decorated four-star general who testified, this incredible, you know, celebrated war hero who testified at the McCormick-Dickstein Committee that he had been recruited for a plot to overthrow the president, and he named names in those proceedings, and yet for that piece of history to eventually be swept under the rug so that it's now almost impossible to find people who even have heard of it, let alone know anything about it. I mean, that's an incredible example of history being written by the winners, isn't it?
It certainly is. And if I'm not mistaken, he received the Medal of Honor either two or three times. And that's really extraordinary.
I believe it was twice, and I believe he was only one of three people to ever do that.
That's unbelievable. I mean, what you'd have to do to get it once, you usually have to die. But that's not necessarily so, as we see. But he must have been quite a person. And I do a radio show and have for about 7 years every Thursday called the Marine Disquisition on a station out of New Zealand and on Blog Talk as well. And Drew Raines is, I think, a nephew of his. And so I kind of stay up on the history of the general. But anyway, the point is that there are things going on that people just can't identify. And you and I identify them, and there are a handful of others that do too, but not too many. And it explains in part what's going on and why it's going on. What we're witnessing here just didn't happen. These people are not incompetent. I mean, they've got excellent minds and educations, even though they essentially can be called the enemy. You don't underestimate them. And they periodically do this, historically. And if they're not happy having almost all the money and almost all the power, they have to have it all. And in that process, they have to enslave the people. Is probably the best word for it. And that's what they're up to. And people have got to understand that. And if they can, they can understand what they're up to. And they know that this thing is going to crash and burn. The question is how and when. And they make those decisions. I mean, you could have an untoward event that could cause something like that, but waiting for that event, you might wait forever. These people know what they're doing. And they want to take the world down and put it back together again in another way, a way that they would like it. And by their own writings, in that process, they want to get rid of 60 to 80% of the people in the world. And I don't really like that idea. What do you think, James?
Oh, I don't think I'm much of a fan of that idea either. Well, just for a point of, to set the record straight, Smedley Butler was one of 19 people to twice receive the Medal of Honor, one of three to be awarded both the Marine Corps Brevet Medal and the Medal of Honor, and the only person to be awarded the Brevet Medal and two Medals of Honor, all for separate actions. So, again, a quite incredible, remarkable historical feat. But getting back to what you're saying, I think you hit on one of the key ways in which they've tried to deflect any sincere criticism of the system and the way things are being run into the ground. And that is the old canard of the incompetence defense, that basically the government and the people involved in running the government are just too inept to actually pull anything off. Therefore, to think that they could possibly be involved in, say, deliberately steering the economy into the ground or deliberately lying their way into war or anything of that sort, I mean, that's just conspiracy theory, isn't it?
Well, you might say it's real history, and they would have to then defend it. But you're right. They play this little game, oh, we made a mistake, and they get away with it. Because most people make mistakes, just like the policeman who stops you and says you were speeding. And you say, officer, I know I was not. And he says, well, you probably sped at some time in the last month or two, and so I'm going to give you a ticket anyway. The same concept. But that's what they're up to. And it's very difficult to figure out what they're going to do next. And I continually go back to history and what they did before. And they'll generally, is what I found, follow the same general plan and bring the world economy down to the level that they want it in order to exert more control. And each time they've tried this, historically, they've retained their positions for the most part, but they've never been successful in total subjugation. And that's what they're after this time. This is big for them. Another thing, too, is that we're looking at a time when we have the internet and talk radio. We never had those before, say, 15 or 20 years, say 20 years ago. And we are able, through those mediums, to inform the people of the world that things that are going on in history aren't the way they really are. And this catching on has us breathing down their neck. They have to expedite everything because we're pushing very, very hard from behind by informing people of what's going on. And so they have to get their program together more quickly. And when they do that, they make mistakes. And the more they make, the better it is for us. I mean, people say, well, if they make a mistake with the economy, it would all be awful. I get news for you. No matter what they do, it's going to be awful anyway. There's no escaping that. They're on a path where they can't turn back. And they know that. And that path was 8 years ago. And it was up until that time they could have reversed what they were doing, but not anymore. And so if they're wrong and they don't win and subject the people of the world, they will be discovered because of what we're telling people. And that's showing up particularly in Europe as well. With the situation with the countries that have trouble over there financially. And I'm not going to go into why they have trouble. I think most of us have some kind of an understanding. And the problem is that they've overreached themselves in the question of Greece. And what they want, the wish list presented to the Greek government, which is run by, he calls himself a socialist, but Judge Papandreou, like his father Andras, is a Marxist, no question. A wolf in sheep's clothing. And the things that J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs requested in behalf of the European bankers is astounding. Collateral on the loans. What is a collateral? All the islands, all the seaports, all the airports, the electric, the gas, the water, transportation, whether it be buses or trains. I don't know if I've left anything out, but anyway, it's a good start. The absolute gall of them demanding those things is incredible, because they should have never made the loans in the first place, and they created the money out of thin air. And so the opposition in Greece is saying, no, we don't want to do that. Now, I understand that today we're supposed to have another secret meeting, and this is going to be today at 3 p.m. in Luxembourg, which was about 6 or 7 hours ago, and we'll see what comes out of that. There's a lot of things that Papandreou can't do, and one of them is give the country away. And that has to be approved by the House of Representatives. I think it's pronounced the Voli. And what you're not getting in the media, which you will in reading the International Forecaster and listening to the Corbett Report, is that every day there's more than 150,000 people in the streets demonstrating peacefully. And all over the country, people in Greece understand what the bankers want to do now. Now, because they didn't understand before, the opposition party, which is run by Mr. Samos, and I'm sure the pronunciation is wrong, but anyway, a very intelligent, patriotic type of gentleman with an excellent education, and he has informed the people of what the bankers are really up to. And if they cared about Greece, what they would do is continue to finance them at lower interest rates. They would extend the time frame. They wouldn't jam austerity down their throat in 1 year. Wages are off 35-40%. There's no need for that, unless you want to disembowel the country. Because if the wages go down, the revenues fall, and they can't pay off the debt. So the payback gets bigger. And so what you do is you have austerity over 5 years, 20% a year, and raise taxes, 20% a year. And then it's not as painful, and then you can recover. But they don't want them to recover. They want them to be a satrapy of the European bankers. And of course, the bankers want to own everything. So if you have to go to the Parthenon or the Acropolis or whatever, the ticket won't be $18. And incidentally, that's what it costs. The ticket will be probably $36. And so that the bankers can make more money. It's like them borrowing money from the central banks today and paying 0.25% or 1% and lending it out at 30. Same game. So I don't know whether they're going to come to a conclusion. And I don't think so. I think this thing's going to drag on. We'll know more later today. And anything that will take a vote of the people in Greece will be defeated. I mean, 75-80% of the people will say no to any kind of a deal. It's not a reasonable deal. And the bankers are not going to give any reasonable deals. And why Greece is so important, were they to partially default, not totally, but just partially. I'll be extended over a time period of 5 or 10 years, which the bankers don't want either. If they have to partially default, the other nations will follow them. Ireland, Portugal, and there's no question in my mind that Italy, Spain, and Belgium will be all in the same boat, only the numbers are much bigger. The first three I mentioned, Ireland, Portugal, and Greece, added together, are about the same size as Italy or Spain. Spain's the fourth largest economy in Europe. Most people don't realize that because they don't know very much about Europe. And so this would take quite a chunk out of the European economy. And that's the way I think, no matter which way they cut it, that's the way it's going to go.
It's funny, isn't it, how you can have the corporate-owned media positively hyperventilating to try to cover the beginnings of the Arab Spring in Egypt and positively hyping that to the moon and milking it for everything that it's worth, and yet being absolutely silent and enough for you to hear a pin drop when it comes to the protests going on in Greece or in Spain or in other austerity-type protests. There seems to be a bit of double standard going on there. I wonder why that would be.
Well, it's been that way for a long, long time, particularly since the late 1930s. And it's something we can expect because the bankers own the media. And that's, again, why it's so very, very important that people listen to the James Corbett Report and read the International Forecaster, because all the things that you need to know are in those reports. They're very, very important because you're not getting the truth, or I'll put it this way, they lie by omission by not including it. And what James just said is perfectly true. They don't cover the demonstrations every day in Greece. And in my last issue, which is on Wednesday, I had several links to what had gone on in the demonstrations in Spain. The people who were demonstrating weren't doing anything. They were sitting down. Some of them were standing. And the police came up, about 20 of them, with these big, long truncheons and started beating everybody mercilessly, like they were some sort of wounded animal or something. And when I saw that, you know, I'm a veteran, and when I saw that, the first thing I wanted to do was grab for my rifle. Because if I had been there and had a weapon, I would have killed them all. What they were doing was horrible. And mostly to women and children and little girls. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, what do they teach these people? And so the demonstrations in Greece per police activity were horrible. But you're not going to see that. And that's what James was talking about. Selected news. And that's why we're here, to give you the alternative and more truthful news that you're going to get any place else.
Well, unfortunately, that's true, and that scares me because I'm just an English teacher in Japan. I am not a reporter by any means. I'm just doing this because, again, I'm not seeing it being done by the corporate media, which, of course, is bought and paid for by the banksters and the corporations, which are in their pocket. So it is kind of scary in a way, but this is absolutely necessary. And you brought up the idea of turning to historical parallels to see how things will play out in our current times. And I think we do have something vaguely analogous to the time that we're living through right now, where we have this incredible explosion of communication that was truly inconceivable just a generation ago because of the new flowering of technology. And I think obviously we did see something like that popping up in Europe in the 15th century with the invention of the movable type printing press. and the incredible changes to society that were that came as a direct result of that. What do you think about that as an historical analogy, and what do you think we can expect to see given that analogy?
Well, I've myself used it many, many times. The advent of Gutenberg, and then the advent of the Internet. Only this time, the Internet was created by government, and it's turned around and bit them in the behind, because we're using it to its best advantage. And so the introduction of the written word and the press and so on, at that time, which is some 500 years ago, was extremely important. But this is far, far more important. Not only can we get the word out, but we can bring justification and justice once these people who are engineering this economic and financial failure are exposed. We can stop them from doing it again, whereas historically, it's not been possible. And that's extremely important. In other words, who's doing it? Why are they doing it? And what is the result that they expect? And we know that, and we're imparting that to people all over the world. And everybody has the same problems that America has. The same group of criminals, more or less, are running every country. And all you have to do is look at the Bank for International Settlements, the Bankers Bank. They include all the countries in the world. They acted as a depository. They act as a private monopoly, for the most part. And even during World War II, all their meetings were attended to by a representative from the German government. And you would think that that wouldn't happen, but it did. Of course, Basel is very close to Germany. It's right on the border. I crossed that border there, I don't know how many times. But, and so you have these institutions that they've set up to carry forward the work that they want for one world currency, one world government, one world army, one world everything. And that's really what they're up to. And we're exposing them, and we couldn't do it the way we're doing it had it not been really for the Internet and talk radio. It's just incredible what we're able to accomplish.
Well, we are blessed in some ways to be living in these times and to be able to utilize this technology in a way to hopefully, really, and truly take back humanity from the parasites who have been leeching off of us for so many generations, centuries. I mean, how far back does this go? A very long time, at least. So it is extremely exciting in some ways. And of course, with that comes a lot of danger, and there's a lot going on. But it is always a pleasure to have you here talking about this, because I know that you, of all people, read so much, so voluminously. I don't know how you have time to possibly even write the newsletter, let alone do all of the radio shows you do and all of the other work you do. It's quite phenomenal. So my hat's off to you for making the most of this this internet revolution that we're living through. And while we're at it, why don't we tell people about your website and the kind of information that they can find there?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for your comments. And I just thank God that I'll be 76 in October. And with the exception of the flu, I've never been ill. So maybe there's a mission to this madness, or vice versa. But anyway, the international forecasts are 22 years old now. It is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Usually runs around 40 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the Internet. Everything you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternational, F-O-R-E-C-A-S-T-E-R.com. You can also go to www.intforecaster.com. That's int, forecaster.com. If you have a question, we answer everyone. Or if you'd like a copy of either, or if you'd like a copy of our recent recommendations on gold and silver shares, you can email us at bob@intforecaster.com. That's bob@intforecaster.com. And for those of you who'd like to call toll-free, it's 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. You can get either copy there. Or if you'd like to become a subscriber, there is a special offering there for a free one-year subscription. It's a terrific offer. Take advantage of it.
All right, and the next edition of the Forecaster, I presume, will be coming out tomorrow, isn't that right?
That's right, and we're studiously working on it.
Well, how about a little preview
for my listeners? I usually work from 4 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Wow. Well, you're sleeping too much.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, how about a little preview for our listeners? What are you working on for the next issue?
I talk about the financial situation in the United States as well as Europe, and what we might expect. I think Greece is a watershed. I think the municipal and state problems in America are a watershed. The second half of the year is going to be dreadful. I expect the GDP to go to somewhere between 0 and 2%. It's already 1.8 in the first quarter, and it's not going to be good. They're making a case now for QE3. I predicted QE3 a year ago last month, and I explained how and why we would have to have it, unless they wanted to pull the plug. And they're not ready for that yet because they haven't had enough wars going. And this is very difficult for me to explain to my audience of active and retired military people. They're finally realizing that men like Kissinger think that they're stupid animals. And I happened to be one of them at one time, so I really didn't like that comment at all, and I'm sure they don't. But I think they got to stoke up reasons to deflect what's going on fiscally and monetarily throughout the world, and at the same time get the young people off the street so they can get them over in a war, getting them killed. And so that's what I think we're facing, perhaps not immediately, but it's in the program. And whether it's 6 months or a year or 2 years from now, it's going to happen.
Unfortunately, it looks that way. And to my mind, there's just no reason not to get involved and not to get active in trying to spread the word and understanding about what we're living through and who's really behind it, because that's ultimately the information that's going to be able to help us make this transition into a better world, no matter what we have to go through in order to get there. But having said that, I certainly hope that people will go to intforecaster.com to check out the International Forecaster and to start equipping and arming themselves with the knowledge that they will need to understand what's really happening. So once again, Bob Chapman, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us today.
Well, you're welcome, and it's a joy for me to do this program.